Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Penske Podcast. If you haven't tuned in before, this is a podcast where we are running through all 178 episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, giving our thoughts and feelings about each and every one. Right now we're up to Season 4, Episode 1. We're turning the page, starting a whole new chapter in the Trek saga with Season 4. This one's called The Best of Both Worlds Part 2. It was directed by Cliff Bohl, written by Michael Piller, and it aired back on September 24th, 1990. This is the story, or the episode rather, that concludes the Best of Both Worlds storyline. You know, one of those storylines that's generally considered to be one of the best in Trek canon. And so in this one, it's going to involve Riker getting captaincy, Picard Locutus being kidnapped or taken back, as it were, and telling everyone to go to sleep. So for this one, Sean and Clay are going to join me to continue what they started in the Best of Both Worlds Part 1. Right after this break, me, Sean, and Clay are going to go deep on the best of both worlds.
The knowledge and experience of the human, Picard, is part of us now. It has prepared us for all possible courses of action. Your resistance is hopeless. Number one.
And we're back. Best of Both Worlds, Part 2. I'm joined by Sean and Clay. Sean, how are you?
Good. I'm so excited for this second part here.
Clay, how are you?
Boo!
We have the devil and the angel on my shoulder.
No, I'm just kidding. I didn't think it was bad.
We have to start off on the right foot here. We're off to season four. So what that means is that even though no time has passed in these episodes, everyone has a slightly different haircut when we come back. and the production value is a little bit higher for Best of Both Worlds Part 2. So, for everyone who hasn't tuned in to catch part one, we've watched part one, which is all pure pacing, I think. A suspenseful built episode that generally centers around Picard being taken, Riker dealing with the fact that he doesn't know what he wants to do for a career, and it ends with the classic camera pan to Mr. Worf fire. And right now, we're going to go into Best of Both Worlds part two, which I think my lead-off point here, I think, is going to be that I think the first 80% of Best of Both Worlds Part 2 fixes everything I sort of had a criticism as for Part 1. I don't know how you guys feel about that, but what are your general thoughts?
I'm curious what you mean by that, Wes. I don't remember any of us having any severe criticism for the first part.
Well, I think the first thing worth mentioning, I guess, is that we were all sort of underwhelmed by the Borg in the first one.
Right,
I did
right,
notice they did much better lighting on the Borg ship in the second part. It's actually dark in some places. Along with that, it's also what I thought was the weakest part of the first part is that it's a pure pace episode. It's like a pure plot driven action suspense thriller type thing, and it was lacking a lot of the emotion about what it means for Picard to be assimilated. And I think the first half, especially Best of Both Worlds Part 2, covers all of that.
Right.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Well, I think that's a little unfair because we also did determine that at least the first half is not a Picard episode. Mm-hmm. So I think you can cover that stuff in Part 2 without it being specifically detrimental to the first half that you didn't.
Do you think this second part's a Picard episode?
Honestly, I don't really know whose episode this is. It's tough. I feel like it's kind of, so. Sean, what's your opinion of it going in?
Yeah, I don't think it's anyone's episode, really. I mean, you could argue it's Riker because he's sort of in charge and he is technically making the decisions. But I don't know if he gets the most camera time. Really, we're just waiting for Picard to get back, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, I guess I should mention that I watched both of these as separately as possible. I didn't wait 3 months in between watching each episode, but I tried to isolate them as much as possible. Like, I only watched this part two last night, after we were done recording part one. So I wanted to keep it as separate as possible, and I feel that they're very different episodes.
Yes.
And I think that might be more apparent if you watch them back to back.
Yeah, so my main, I don't even know if it's a criticism, but it's like, the beginning is just so immediately anticlimactic.
Yes.
And slow. And I couldn't, unless I missed a plot point, somebody said, why, after their weapon doesn't work, why doesn't the Borg ship just blow them up?
Because the Crusher line that they're unwilling to kill Picard because it's like cutting off your own limb. No.
Why doesn't the Borg blow up the Enterprise?
Oh, I see what you mean. And why it just leaves?
Yeah.
Right.
They do have problems with that occasionally. It's the same.
Yeah.
It's the same as when after the ship has decimated the fleet at Wolf 359, the Enterprise puts up like a 5-minute fight against them somehow. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't seem like this makes any sense. And it's the same kind of situation.
I guess more so than even that is that I don't, you know, if you could make the argument, if you really wanted to, that they're no longer a threat or some shit like that. But I think the bigger problem is there's no sense of urgency from anybody in that first. It's like the weapon doesn't work and they're like, huh, well.
they're Mr. professionals.
Mr. LaForge, if you could go check the fuse box, that would be great.
They're total pros. I sort of understand. I saw those problems more in the second part here, where they're trying to the resolution, trying to come up with how to end this is obviously problematic. Because of who you're dealing with in the Borg as to why they don't just completely destroy you, how close you can get, like the limits that they have to put them under while still allowing them to rescue Picard is kind of a difficult thing. Like they can't transport on there, but they can transport if they're right next to them, you know?
Right.
It's that kind of stuff. Like they have to do a lot of sort of back and forth.
Well, I mean, I had no problem with the with the idea that they had to fly the ship through the magnetic field or whatever that shit was. But yeah, I see what you're saying. I just thought that the beginning of it was like such a – especially – you don't even have to watch the first half in its entirety. Even after that recap they do at the beginning.
Yeah.
It's just the first thing that happens is the weapon doesn't work and everyone's like, all right, well, take five, smoke them if you got them, and then we'll see what we're going to do next.
Interesting. Yeah.
There was no reason for that. They could have unleashed their weapons and they could have reflected and slammed into the Enterprise and they could have had, you know, the ship would start smoking and there'd be fire and then you could still have this dialogue with Picard and Riker and you would have maintained the intensity. You would have paid off promise from the previous episode and still managed to get all your plot points in.
Right. I had no idea the Borg had even left the space until like a couple minutes later because like
there's a commercial break and you come back and they're gone.
Yeah. I didn't, which is probably not the best narrative choice, but, I mean, there was no sense of urgency from the crew. There was no sense of urgency, or danger coming from the Borg anymore. It was just like that plot point didn't work. And now what? We just sit around for a while while, I mean, even when they're like, yeah, the Borg are on their way to Earth. It wasn't even like, guys, the Borg are on their way to Earth. We have to go now. It's like, oh, you know.
Yeah.
We swing by 10-4 and get a beer. If it works, it works.
I kind of feel that that's the tone of the show. You know, like.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's the tone of the show. But I mean, if you're, you've already set up this villain as someone who is an absolute destroyer. And you've managed to take your one shot and you missed, and they for some reason decided not to blow you up. I don't think it's time to kind of sit back on your heels and be all diplomatic about it.
I guess, but right. I mean, it's in the first part. I feel that they're kind of similar. Like they're in that one, they're being pursued for most of it, but they're still relatively all about business, you know, while this is going on.
Right.
I feel at least in the second part, the engines are burnt out. Like they have a reason they can't go anywhere.
Well, okay, let's put it this way. There's no scene in this episode while they're waiting for shit to get back up and running that is on the same emotional level as the Picard and Guinan scene from yesterday's Enterprise.
Oh,
which,
see. Ooh.
Which you think go ahead.
Because I love the Riker Guinan scene because I feel like it captures that aspect of it.
I mean, kind of. I don't want to talk the whole time though. But Sean, what do you think?
Well, I liked that scene with Riker and Guinan as well. I was skeptical as the scene started, and I thought, is this one of those things where Guinan's going to do something that Troy could have easily have done? And the answer is no. In fact, I think Troy is well used at the end when she senses Picard trying to break through.
Yeah,
and I think Guinan is effective in her warning to Riker just to let Picard go. Yep. And in fact, I feel like they could have played it up more. Like, he had a additional pip on his collar all of a sudden between scenes. I didn't see him actually put it on once he became captain.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I thought, what if he didn't put it on and he just put it on the desk, and then he had this scene with Guinan, and after she left, he finally puts it on. Like, something like that to really drive it home.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. It's
I guess my point is, all of that stuff is fine. I thought that that scene was fine. It did what it needed to do. But there was just no, I don't know. I just didn't feel like there was any, like, the scene when he's appointing Shelby as the first officer.
Yeah.
even that is just like taking a stroll down the superlatives of why everybody is great on the ship.
Yeah.
Before he's like, now we're going to give it to her. And everyone, and instead of being like, all right, so let's get fucking moving, they're like, oh, that's kind of weird. You know, right.
I feel like Worf was the sort of like, compromise choice in that, like, why would Worf be from, like, Worf just, he's, you know, he's the lowest rank clearly, and he also is the poorest choice, I would think, for a first officer. It's just, it's funny that they're like, we don't have any characters who would like reasonably fit, so Worf, you just stand up here next to Data and Shelby, who are really the only two options at this point.
Like,
go ahead, Clay.
Oh, I was just gonna say, like, I think that scene shouldn't have actually even happened. That scene should have been Riker being like, Shelby, you are now acting first officer, let's fucking go. And I think that's, you know what I mean? Like, why were they taking the time to do that?
I wrote down that scene is Riker as his first act of being captain. And he's sort of admitting that he can't fill the shoes of Picard. He mentions it sort of like, I wish Picard was here. Because right after that, they have the Guinan Riker scene where she has to talk him into doing what he needs to do. So I saw that as him sort of being impotent, slightly impotent at first. Like, he's unwilling to sort of take the reins at that point.
Yeah, I mean, like, all of that I'm fine with. It's just, I think the intensity level is not where it should be.
Okay.
I agree, but that's the criticism of Star Trek overall. I can't remember what podcast it was, Clay, but you had a great word for how you described the crew. It was like, it wasn't stoic, but it was a word like that. And it was just too much. They were just too professional. They were too, all they did was medium react to everything. And there wasn't really...
Right.
There aren't very many moments where Picard goes, the line must be drawn here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right, right.
But that's what this episode needed, was to really punch it up when it counted, and it just played it at medium pace.
Even when they get their communication up and working, and they talk to Admiral Hanson. Hardpants.
Yeah.
he on his end is kind of like, man, things are going real bad over here, guys. And then his ship gets blown up, and Data just kind of goes like, oh, that's weird. I guess they don't have a signal over there.
They're done. They're done. The electromagnetic. I mean, that's an interesting criticism, because I think your criticism is just coming in early as to what I would say would be the main problem with this episode. And it's funny, because watching this episode this time, I actually think it's a lot better than it generally gets credit for. It's generally seen as the weaker part of the two.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in some aspects it's much better than the first part. But in one aspect, it's a lot worse. And that aspect is how you said that the stakes aren't really feeling anything.
Mm-hmm.
This episode is pretty good, or very good in my opinion, until basically they snap Picard out of it. And he's just like, whew. Boy, that was a hell of a thing that just happened to me. How about I go put a bandage on my head and I'll just go stand in my ready room? I think the biggest problem with this episode is that there's no implication besides Picard looking out a window at the very end that he has any problem with what has actually happened to him.
Well, the idea, I think, is to they know they're going to expand on that in the years to come through the movies as well. And I do agree. Like, it doesn't seem like it's devastating enough. Even like, there's no brief moment where Picard even has that. Well, he does shed a tear when he's as a Borg operated on. And then like that scene at the very end helps. But I feel like they could have used a better emotional beat to know how he he was being ripped apart inside.
Well, what you just said at the end there, when they snap him out of it, there's a line that I thought was interesting that they didn't cut. Riker goes up to him and he says, "How are you feeling?" And Picard's like, "I have a headache," or whatever. And Riker goes, "How much do you remember?" Picard takes a beat and then he says, "Everything." They mm-hmm. should have mm-hmm. cut it right there, but instead he continues and he says, "Especially my number one officer taking some unorthodox choices." It's like, no, yeah. you have to cut it on him remembering that he caused 11,000 people to die.
Right.
And
right.
that is the end of that scene.
Right. right. Yeah. No, I agree with that.
And so are all the ships in the Federation gone except for the Enterprise?
They never seem to have a problem rebuilding the fleet at this point.
Yeah. So
what happened to the Klingons and the Romulans they supposedly called in to help?
I don't think they ever made it. It's implied that the Klingons might have seen it over the hill and were like, "Ooh, fuck this. Like, we'll just head back and see what happens." But I don't think they ever called the Romulans either, unfortunately.
I think the one thing that really stood out to me at the end is, is along the same lines of what you're saying, in that realistically, Riker should continue to be the captain for like 4 or 5 more episodes.
Yes. Yeah.
If they're going to, again, structure of the show in the right. time that it was made does not really serve itself for doing a long form story like that. But I think you talked about this a little bit last week when you said, when you said that someone was saying on some website that if they were to do this now, then Picard would have been a Borg for much longer.
Yep.
I don't necessarily think that is true as much as I think Picard. I think Picard needs to not come back to being the captain right away.
Right.
Like he needs to have that time to come back to being himself. Like it's like they just pulled the shit off of him and then put him right back in the captain's chair.
Yeah, with a bandage on his head.
Yeah, that's a little, and everyone's fine with it. Like right, there's nobody is not fine with it.
There's not, the Starfleet doesn't want to do like a court martial, but they don't want to do like a investigation into what happened. You know, there's like, no, everyone's fine with just giving it back. I would have been fine if you cut the scene on Picard saying everything and then you show him in like sick bay, recovering or something like that. There's no need for him to be back in his ready room.
Right.
Yeah. And if anything, I don't know, maybe you could have done a scene where, you could have still done that scene where Shelby, says that she's leaving, but she could have been saying that to Riker. So Riker's still in charge, but clearly they're making the implication that he's going back to being the first officer.
Yes.
Without straight up being like, well, everything's back to normal now. I guess we can get on with whatever we're doing.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, that's my general, I think that's the weakest part of this episode. And I think the previous aspects of that I really enjoy. I don't have that much of a problem with the pacing early on. I like the field promotion scene. I love the Admiral Hansen doing the getting very upset when Shelby says that Picard had assisted the Borg with his knowledge. I like it all the way through. I like the Worf and Data rescue scene, mostly because I think Worf and Data are one of the better pairings of characters to do anything.
I think they're a fantastic pairing. The one downside to putting those two guys together is there's less of a human element.
Yep.
But, I mean, if you just want, like, a Black Ops team, it's going to be Data and Worf.
I like
they're like the Tango and Cash of the Enterprise.
I like Worf admitting that he needed help when he's like, "Data, help me!" As Borg Picard is attacking him.
Well, maybe they're not great because Data does stand there and watch Worf get his ass handed.
Yeah,
to him.
I don't know. I don't know what that was about. What was making him call for help? Was that just a power move because Data wants him to know that he would be first officer before he would be in the real life?
Oh, I did want to mention that, you know, I mean, all things aside, I thought this was a really good episode. I think about halfway through it, I kind of took a step back and I was like, all right, I thought the first half was really great. But as far as just straight episodes go, this is really good. Mm-hmm. And I mean, they clearly continued the upping of the budget, like that shot of where they come out of they come around Saturn or whatever, and it's all the busted ships was awesome.
Yeah.
Reminded me of, there's a similar shot in the reboot, the 2009 reboot, that was equally as awesome.
Oh, just the ship graveyard, basically, that they fly through.
And my favorite thing that they did, I don't know if he does this all the time, but did you notice that when he, Riker is on the battle bridge and he's talking to Locutus, when he stands up, he does the shirt pull?
Yes, he does that in the ready room too, I noticed. When he gets out of the chair, he adjusts himself,
I don't know if that's something that they all do, but if not, it's a nice touch.
Yep.
They call that the Picard maneuver.
As someone watching the Blu-rays, what's funny about that scene on the Battle Bridge is there's a warning before you start the episode. It says, it's like, we apologize, but there are 3 seconds of standard definition in this because they couldn't find the original film to upgrade, Blu-ray. So it's that scene where Riker is talking to Locutus. It's one shot of Riker standing behind that ensign guy. And it's just in standard definition.
I actually did notice that. I thought like my streaming had just cut out or something for that second. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had another question. Oh, did you notice that when Riker calls for Maneuver Riker 1, it's clearly an overdub of some other line?
Oh, is it? Well, yeah, Riker Alpha.
Whatever.
I love it when they're like, he's like, Crusher, engage Riker Alpha 1, and the ship just turns to the left, and it's like, why didn't you just say go left?
And clearly these are all maneuvers that he just typed into the system like 20 minutes ago, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But even the guy who's running the panel or whatever, when he says it back to him, his line is overdubbed too. I wonder what they put there.
Interesting. Riker must have had like a more customized version of his shit. But it's funny. There's a turning point in this episode where I think it starts to slightly go downhill. And it's funny because it starts with a line that's probably the worst line in the episode, delivered by probably the worst actor on the show. It's when Wesley's sitting there and he said, where the hell is it? The saucer section's a sitting duck, which is possibly the worst line of the show. And after that point, I feel that's when the downslide for the episode starts to happen. But I just thought it was funny it was summed up in one line.
Well, yeah. What saves it is that once Locutus comes back to the Enterprise, he basically turns into Lewis Tully from Ghostbusters. Right. Where he's still possessed by the demon, but he's really kind of all nonchalant about it. Where he's like, no, this is great. You will all be assimilated. It will be great.
Well, he's go ahead, Sean. What do you want to say about that?
Picard has his robot arm and he's looking at the monitors and he's checking it out. Like, you already know what those things are. You already know this ship. What the fuck are you doing, man? Sit down.
Checking out his, I thought he was kind of a, the comedian from, Erasus O'Connor in the second episode. They had Joe Piscopo. Mm-hmm, I kind of felt like when Picard came back as Locutus on the ship, he was kind of like a cyborg, like roast comic, where he's like, he's like, you will be assimilated, and Worf's like, I don't want to be assimilated, and he's like, you will be added to the new order, and just like turns and walks around.
That's right before the doctor lunges at him and injects him to knock him out or whatever. They let him get a few jokes in first. Yeah.
He just burns. He calls Data obsolete.
Yeah. Wait. What I love is when Riker is deciding who his number two should be, he looks at Data and goes, you being a robot means you lack ambition or something.
I know. That's a cruel thing to say in front of everybody.
It was really insulting. And besides, weren't we talking about you lacking ambition, Captain Beard, when you didn't want to be captain for a while last episode?
Well, Data's also one step behind Riker. You know, so it's a weird thing to say to him. But when he's like, if Riker were to die, Data would just take his place. Right, like, it's right. It doesn't really make sense. There was a couple lines. I noticed that one. There's also in the turbo lift earlier, Worf and Riker are together, and Worf has the line, the Borg have neither honor nor courage, and that is our greatest advantage.
Yeah, that was weird.
And I was like, I know, I'd admit they don't have honor, but they kind of slowly walk towards you to die. Like, they seem kind of courageous in a weird way.
That made Worf seem very useless at that moment, because he should, I know he wants to think that it's very black and white, but come on, man. I mean, you were a warrior. This is a new kind of enemy. You know that they courage doesn't apply to them. This
right.
Very
just,
different.
Just stick to honor, because the Borg don't have honor. They would do whatever it took to beat you. But I don't know.
So you could have given him a better line. You could have given him something that fed into what Riker eventually decided to do to help win.
Right.
You know?
They have no soul. Right. You know, they have no inner passion or anything. Like something to make them turn
they
them
do
away
not
from
love.
Their, they do not love. They don't have Klingon love poetry.
They are not fully functional.
But we were talking about in the first part how the Borg were sort of underserved or underutilized. I thought they kind of fixed them as a character here. They're a little bit more intimidating. Because of the way that the plot works, where they're unwilling to sort of disconnect from Locutus, and they're also sort of willing to allow him to just go if it suits the greater good, they're willing to just give him up.
Right.
That's a sort of strategy and like tacticalness to them that you don't really get in the first part. And it makes sense with how machine oriented they are.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I noticed at the very end when Picard is sitting there, like his outfit looks top notch. Even by today's standards, I think it pretty much holds up. It's got like rubber, plastic armor, and you know, the lights.
Yeah, it was good. I wonder,
but then there's the few little twisty thumbs that come off of him. Like, I don't. Do you think I could just break those things off if you wanted to?
Well, that was one of the things I thought was pretty funny. Is first of all, I didn't realize that they just put those arms on you like a glove because that was pretty hokey.
Yeah, if this show was done modern, they definitely would amputate your arm.
Yeah,
and connect a new thumb.
Yeah. And also, I don't think adding that thing really helped him at all. That wasn't really an upgrade.
It didn't seem good at picking the lock when he tried to zap his way out of it.
Right. The cords that they plug into your head, all that stuff dangles like, motherfucker. You get caught on shit all the time on other people's twisty thumbs as you walk by them.
There's a lot of loose corners on the Borg chip, too. It's not like it's a very streamlined thing that you just get caught everywhere.
I have two questions for you guys.
Sure.
One of them is more heady than the other one. So the plan to go back and get Picard, I can't remember. How did they come to that plan? Is that – that's Riker's plan, right?
Riker's plan, yeah.
Okay.
They never discuss – they never show him discussing what's happening.
Right.
It's just supposed to be spurred by the Guinan conversation.
Yeah, because – well, in that case, it seems extra weird that they did that if that conversation was about letting him go, et cetera, et cetera. Because as soon as their shit was disabled and he's like, okay, send the away team in or whatever. I was like, no, shoot the ship.
Right.
Yeah. Fire everything. Yeah. That plan you had of driving the ship through the Borg ship, still do that.
Still keep it going. Yeah.
He's like, you're right, guy. I will let him go. Let's go get him.
Yeah. And my other question is, so if the idea is that Locutus has all of the working knowledge that Picard has and all of the battle strategy that Picard has.
Yep.
Are we to assume, maybe this is reading too much in, dissecting it too much, that it doesn't have the same reasoning and application abilities that Picard would have?
Yes, I think that's the implication. They're going basically off of what Picard would sort of think was likely. Uh-huh. And they operate based on they know, you know, typical Starfleet maneuvers would be, you know, put no one of importance in the saucer section. It's like the civilian escape shuttle, basically.
Yeah.
So that's why they ignore that and stuff.
Okay, because
like
I was wondering because I was trying to figure out that it must be more like they downloaded Picard's user manual or something,
right?
Because otherwise, Locutus should have been able to anticipate what they were doing. Or
right.
something, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you can think of it as they took his knowledge, but he's not actively assisting them in like, right. Oh, I bet Riker's playing a trick on us right here.
Right, right,
that
okay.
kind of thing.
Right, it would be nice if they had visualized them getting information from Picard, because later we learned that he helped them. They basically fed into his brain and figured it out.
Yep.
But it would be nice to have a way where you can see that happening. Like he's fighting it, and then they're like, oh, what's that? These are the, you know, security codes to every ship. Thank you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You could have done that in the scene where they sort of like bleach his face or whatever they do. You know, like if he was a little bit more resistant until they did that laser thing on him, and then he kind of settles down. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned that, though, because I think one of the more interesting parts that I never really thought of that much. I always thought it was getting a little bit hokey at that point, but I really like the fact that they used Data as a way to connect to the machine part of the Borg. You know, it makes perfect sense, but it's like a wonderful little, you know, he has the line like, how do we separate the man from the machine? And Data's like, well, how do I interface with the machine?
And
I like that. I like when Picard took his hand the whole time. I thought that was nice.
Yeah, and I just like he's never done it before. I don't know why, because it's super effective, but Data just saying processing. Like as he's just sort of like absorbing all this information, he can't do anything else.
When his daughter says, "Daddy, I love you," he could have said processing.
Processing. I didn't really care for when Locutus started saying sleep. Crusher says, "Yeah, he must be exhausted."
Yeah, that's
come on, Beverly.
that feels like it was backwards. It feels like Data should have thought that, and someone else should have. Chimed in.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's really an elegant way to do that.
No, there isn't.
Where someone doesn't end up looking dumb.
You know what? Right. The best part about that whole ending thing is that my favorite is when like Locutus wakes up when Data makes like first contact with him and he starts trying to escape, and he knocks the security guard who comes over. I appreciate that we got a camera shot of O'Brien looking at it and then going back to monitoring the computer.
Hey, man. He just works here, man. Like I said last time, that should be his catchphrase.
He considered it, but I mean, what a thankless acting job Cole Meany has, where you have to look at this glowing thing, and he has like his arms behind his back and like pretend that he's actually, you know, paying attention to what this fucking glowing wall says to him. It's just like those are the actor choices that you have to make, I guess.
Yeah, I bet like Cole Meany has permanent like retina burns in his eyelids just from whatever the lights on that view screen were.
Yeah, it's like when you leave a Nintendo on too long on old TV.
Just burns
in. Or like, yeah, pre-screensavers.
Yeah.
It's, I like this episode a lot more than I remember liking it. And I think I always remember it as a bit of a letdown from the first part, but I do. I think it's, especially as I've been watching all these episodes through, the shows that do better are generally a little bit more emotionally grounded, even if they don't nail it particularly.
Right.
And I think this one is, it just adds what I was missing from the first part.
I have a question for you guys. So Picard says that Data is obsolete. Do you think that the Borg would find a use for Data, or do you think he's obsolete to the Borg?
I have one thing to say about that, which is in a very early draft of this script, probably more the first part, both Data and Picard are captured by the Borg and they're combined. They use like Data's
really?
Parts. Yeah, they use Data's parts to make the Borg
weird. Implants. I like that.
I miss the character of Picada.
Yeah, why would you miss that?
Yeah, no, I just wanted the word mash Picard and Data together and see what happened. It did not go over very well. I apologize.
It was Picada, Cicada. It's just a big bug.
Descartes.
Yeah.
Descartes.
You're right. That would have been better.
Descartes.
Word mash jokes hardly ever work.
Well, I mean, the Descartes thing would work because it kind of sounds like a painter, which is what Data's into.
That's true. So that should be his painter name. His pen name should be Descartes.
Anyway,
I feel like they would have used Data because Data is comparable because Data's powerful enough to go in and hack the Borg system on Picard. So for the Borg to think that Data's obsolete, that's bullshit. They've assimilated way less powerful beings than Data. I feel like they would love to have Data.
You know what that actually implies then? That actually implies that Picard's understanding of Data is rather dismissive because they would only know as much about Data as Picard knows about Data.
Yeah, that's true.
That's
100%
true. When he was on the ship, do you think they would have been able to scan Data and figure out that he was worth something, you know what I mean?
I would think so. I guess the missing part there is that the Borg don't really ever explain why like having an organic compound is a good part of what they do.
I guess
it's just because they consider, and this is only all real clarified in the second part, like this is the only time they've ever mentioned assimilating cultures, right? They didn't mention that in the first part.
Yeah, he says that to Worf. Yeah,
right. And I think he says it when he when they separate the ships and Locutus is talking to Riker, he says, "You'll escort us to Earth and we will begin to assimilate your culture." So I guess in the Borg view of the universe, what they're really trying to do, and it was almost like they were trying to make them less villainous, which is fascinating, but they're really just trying to create like the perfect organism, you know, which seems obvious, but they're trying to just combine the best parts of everybody.
Right.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh no. I was just going to say, it would be interesting if they had done a future episode where they actually encounter a future Borg who has done that.
Yeah, right. Exactly. They've come closer and closer because they're kind of like a computer program. They're just constantly improving themselves.
Right.
Yeah.
What were you going to say, Sean?
What was I going to ask? Should have lost. Sorry.
Something about the Borg absorbing other cultures and becoming a greater part of themselves.
Is this the first time that, because Picard says, why do you resist? You know, we just want to, you know, make every species happy or whatever. Like, is that the first time that that's ever been alluded to? Because there's never any reason why they want to, absorb everybody unless they thought that they were doing something good or everyone was going off to a better place.
It's definitely the first time I remember them mentioning it, which I think is a huge help for their, like, the species as a character.
Right. And they actually don't go into that until Voyager, when they talk about when people are abducted into the Borg, their consciousness goes to another place to, like, keep them sane.
Right. Yep.
Like a Matrix type of deal.
Yeah. Know? Right. Cause you'd go crazy listening to each other's, voices all the time or whatever, or become incredibly lonely when you're separated from the collective.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about that, ad, but, okay.
The Voyager ad or the aspect of assimilating cultures?
The brains go to a happy place thing. I don't know how I feel about that, but.
The Borg are so unfortunate that they're a great one-time villain that are too good, and you have to keep bringing them back. And every time you bring them back, it just weakens the overall.
Well, I think part of it is, as good as these two episodes are, it unfortunately sets the precedent that you can return from being a Borg.
Yes,
I think in order, like if that was something you couldn't return from, then you probably don't end up with that, you know, how do we explain how we keep them sane? You know, it's like, no, it's like being a vampire. You just get turned into a vampire and that's it, or being a zombie. But, you know, so I think it's a...
I wish they could have gotten around it just by saying Picard was not under their, you know, spell for that long.
Yeah,
like,
you definitely could have. I think you definitely could have gotten around it with Picard, because they point – I mean, like I said last time, I didn't know why he had a name. He specifically has a name because he serves a specific purpose.
Right.
And he is clearly different than the rest of the Hive.
Yep.
So I think you definitely could have got around that. But I mean, like, you know, like you said, with these guys, with any character or alien race they introduce, you have to keep bringing something new to the table. Otherwise, it's just going to be the same thing over and over again. So, I mean – I don't begrudge them changes and adding things and whatever, because that's just what you have to do.
But yeah, it's unfortunate. Go ahead.
I will say the one thing that I didn't like, and hopefully they never used again, was the if everybody goes to sleep, we cause a feedback loop and the ship blows up.
Yeah, that's
what the hell was that?
It's a little bit silly. I would think you could just why not just have them? I guess it's because they don't want to just study them forever, but just be like they're going to wake up. Why don't we blast the hell out of the ship while they can't repair it?
Or like just actually follow through on the Riker angle, and as soon as they get Picard back, do another thing where he's like, "All right, fire," and then they blow the ship apart.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. No, that would have been much more satisfying than we incepted them to all fall asleep, but we didn't realize that the ship was going to blow up because they snore or something.
Because they're all very sleepy. I totally agree. I don't understand why you would remove the satisfaction of the Enterprise actually blowing them up.
I mean, maybe the only thing I can guess is that
it seems too cruel is the only thing I can think of.
I feel maybe it's something like if you have, because is there ever an instance in Next Generation where they actually do actively blow up a Borg ship?
Just the movies.
Okay, because I was thinking maybe having them do that sets the precedent that they can do it.
Oh, I see, yeah.
And it's like, you know, it's one of those things where it's like at the end of Independence Day, where once they get the code to break the shields, then everybody knows the code to break the shields, and they can destroy all the aliens at once.
Yeah, maybe. That makes sense.
I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. Who knows? Maybe it was an ethos thing where they didn't want to just destroy them. Who knows? But...
Huh. Yeah. It is too bad. As I mentioned, the last 5-10 minutes of it are probably the Otter thing.
Or what if at the end they have a moral dilemma where they want to blow them up, but then they're like, well, maybe we shouldn't blow them up because we want to do X, Y, and Z, and then Riker has to make the decision whether or not to basically commit mass genocide.
Yeah.
And then when he does, he's like, yeah, you guys didn't see anything here, right? And they're like, nope, we didn't see a thing.
We didn't see anything. They sort of do that. They bring up the line of like, if we can study them for a little bit if we get over here. But then they just blow the ship up, I guess, to stop that from happening.
Yeah. They do that with Hugh eventually.
Yes.
Five or six.
Yeah. They Iborg is the episode where they start to explore the ethics of destroying the Borg.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Anyone else have anything else we want to say about this one? Or
I was going to say, I felt like the budget, you could see them working around the fact that they didn't have, I know they had more budget, but they didn't have enough budget, I think, as they should have to really pull off this idea.
Yeah.
Like, for example, they have
the
Battle Wolf 359.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And that's such a big marquee milestone moment in this series. And they don't actually show the battle at all.
I disagree with you.
Arrive at all the destroyed ships. What's that?
Yeah, I disagree. I think it was really effective the way they did it. Because, I think the sense of dread that they create is better served showing up and seeing this entire fleet of starships destroyed rather than, you know, getting like a 5-minute battle sequence where everybody gets blown up. You know, it's just, like it has a different effect.
Yeah.
It gives you the sort of nice sort of subtle callback. If you'd been watching the first one or remembering the last ship that Shelby lists as destroyed is the Melbourne, which is the ship Riker was offered command of.
Oh, right.
In the first part.
But no,
sorry, Clay.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I was actually underwhelmed by when they arrived at the graveyard, and I didn't feel like there was enough ships or fire or debris.
I kind of agree with that. Like I wish there was more debris. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I'll agree with that. But yeah, I was just going to say I agree with you too. Overall, Sean, I think. You can see some of the budget limitations. I mean, again, it's another instance where there's like critical damage done to the Enterprise, and the only reason we know is because Worf is reading it off the board.
Yes,
you know, he says, well, there goes the outer hull, and the inner hull is gone now too. And
if you want to recut this episode just before they are like before the Enterprise gets to Worf 359. Just cut in the first 10 minutes of Emissary, the pilot for Deep Space Nine, which is the Battle of Worf 359.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Oh yeah.
So
I'm going to have to watch that. That's cool.
You should just cut those two together. And then when Sisko leaves the whatever ship he was on, then you cut back to the Enterprise just being right there. And that would be the end of it. Yep. But go ahead, John. What did you want to say?
My only other beef was when Picard as a Borg is looking at the view screen inside the cube. The view screen is 4 TVs that are always moving and rotating. And I feel like that's got to be the most annoying thing ever.
He doesn't have a very good like view screen that he can look at as a computer. And they don't have chairs or anything. They just have to stand there and look at it. It's very, very uncomfortable.
Yeah, just big empty warehouse.
And also, I mean, let's be honest. If you wanted to look at this from a more realistic angle, why would they have view screens at all?
Yeah, you think
you're right.
My question about the Borg ship is how do they keep the air in? Because every time the ship goes by, it looks like you can see through it. Like
that's true.
It's just sort of pipes everywhere.
Yeah, I agree. And
because they wouldn't need air.
These big chasms inside. But why would you have that? That doesn't make any sense. Oh, you could write a book on how it doesn't make sense. But artistically, it's a cool idea, and I totally go with it. But it is fun to nitpick.
And this is the first time, especially in the high def resolution, watching this, the matte painting where it sort of shows the big room that they're all sitting in when the collective speaks. It's that shot. There are actually little Borgs moving around on the bottom of the screen.
Oh, really? I missed that.
Yeah, it's interesting. They're like getting in and out of their little chambers.
He's like little breakdancing in the bot. It's so dark though; you can barely see him.
It's a nice touch. I thought it was just a matte painting, but apparently it's got more going on than that. Which is fascinating. Why they'd go through all that work when it was airing in 90 and the standard definition TVs couldn't show that? It would go beyond me, but whatever. Interesting. Yeah. I mean, what do you guys think about the fact that Shelby is virtually a non-entity in the second part? Or do you disagree with that?
Well, when Riker had a talk with her and said we don't have to like each other to to work together. And I felt like they kind of, she melted a little bit there and became more friendly, but they didn't really have much of a send off for her either. She's just suddenly gone. Right. Right.
I was surprised Riker and her didn't have a scene by themselves at the end. not in that way, but like because Picard is there when she says goodbye.
Get your mind out of the gutter, Wes.
Bow, bow, bow.
But yeah, no, I think, yeah, I mean, I think if I were to go with the angle I was talking about earlier, I think it would be Picard doesn't come back to being captain right away, and Shelby becomes first officer to captain for a while.
Yeah, for like five episodes, yeah.
Aside from that, in the episode itself, I do agree that for a character who was written so strongly, and not in like a throwaway kind of way, like she's not like a – like when I was watching the first half, I was like, oh, well, there's no way this character survives because these characters always get killed.
Yeah.
Or they get knocked down a peg or something in some manner, but that never happened to her.
I give the show a big credit for she's really not just sort of like a shrill bitch.
No, not at all.
Which is really a strength of the writing, I think, and it's really fascinating that she manages to hold her own. She's ambitious, but she's not particularly obnoxious at the same time.
Right.
Which could have been an easy way to write that character.
Right. Yeah, because I mean,
I feel like they should. Oh, sorry. I feel like they should. you go, Clay.
I was just going to say,
if we had a hive mind, this wouldn't happen.
I was going to say, that character traditionally would be written for the audience to dislike, in favor of Riker, but they don't really go that way as drastically as they could.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Sean.
Right. I was going to say one thing I would do to make this better would have killed a major character in these two series episodes. I feel like there's such a huge impact for the rest of the series. And
you mean
everybody
like
comes
someone in engineering?
You mean a newly appointed acting ensign
somebody who wouldn't see it coming.
I mean, what if?
No, I agree. I agree. I think that would definitely have added a lot to it. Yeah.
I mean, Wheaton is going to leave very few episodes into the fourth season. I feel he should have brought it up at this point if he was unhappy. You know, that's the perfect.
Yeah.
That's the perfect out.
Right.
I don't know if it would have been laughable if Wesley died because
that would have been dark as fuck, man.
Would it have been dark? Or would it?
Yeah, he's like 15.
Well, Picard just takes his like new robot arm and just like jams it through his head or something.
Punches through his chest. He happens to be on deck 8 through 48 when it collapses or whatever happens.
Right. He lost a lot of good people.
I don't think they would assimilate. I don't think they would assimilate Wesley because they would just turn into a bunch of cowards.
who would you kill, Sean? Your favorite question.
That's true, Wes. I don't know why I do this, but whenever Clay and I are talking about movies or when we're drawing and it's completely silent, I'll just play this game called Who Would You Kill? And I'll introduce it. Like, if you had to kill one person on the Enterprise during part two, who would it be? Oh,
are they all related?
I didn't even notice I was doing it until Clay pointed it out after I'd done it a lot. And he's like, why would you kill them? Why can't you just get them off the ship?
Why can't
they
you
have
just
to die?
Why can't you just love them? No, they have to go permanently. I think if I had to kill someone in this episode, I would. I mean, if we're talking about making this a modern show, Picard would die.
Yeah,
and Riker would become new captain, and Shelby moves in as the first officer.
That's tough though. I mean, because. That's like a massive change.
It is.
That's a massive change.
That's not a change that this show could have been able to make, but if it was a modern show, I think that's the only way you get out of it. If you want to stick to the tone of the show, I think Wesley is the obvious choice.
Yeah.
He's experimental.
I would kill Wesley, and he would die of an STD injected by Geordi.
Now, this may...
And then Geordi would die.
Geordi barrel rolls under the door and locks Wesley in engineering, and that's like
I'm actually going to disagree with you, Wes. I think if you take this show as it is written, as it exists now, if you were to apply it to a modern character killing thing, they would kill Guinan because usually what they do in these shows, if you want to if you want a masterclass in this, and I mean this in the worst way possible, watch The Walking Dead, because you can see who is going to die in every episode of The Walking Dead, because after 10 episodes of not hearing anything from that character, they have like 4 or 5 scenes where they get to say some like really deep monologue. It's he's obviously going to die.
When you tell an anecdote about how a past life event in your life is related to what's going on, you're about to die.
So if you were working by modern TV rules, it probably would have been Guinan.
Interesting. I don't know if her death would have been as impactful. As wonderful as the character as she is. I mean, that's just sort of a hyper nerdy take on it. But I mean, I'd be disappointed to see her go because she's obviously adds so much to every episode she's in.
She doesn't really have anything to do with the plot. She's not doing anything other than helping Riker. Like if she went on to the Borg ship because she could reach the captain or something, and she freed him and died in the process. Like that would be interesting.
Yeah.
Well, it's a tough call though. Cause I mean, if you're going by that logic, then the only people that could have been killed are Riker, Picard, and Shelby.
Yes. Probably.
And there's nobody else who really has any.
Right.
Do you think if Data had died, would the outrage be more or less than the people who are upset that he dies in Nemesis? Spoilers. what do you think? Would that have been a noble death for Data if he had died at Best of Both Worlds?
Honestly, if it was me, I would kill Data often. Because what? You can just build him again.
I guess no one can build Data's except for himself. He seems
That's actually something that you guys talked about last one of the other podcasts we did, and I meant to bring it up. They don't really know everything there is to know about Data. Like a lot of how he was designed is very mysterious, even after they've sort of dissected him. They still really don't know.
Yep.
That's kind of a nice thing to keep in place because it allows you to do things with him and sort of skirt, you know, logic every now and then.
Yeah.
Here's what you do. Here's what you do. Like I said before, I think if Data was responsible, he would have already downloaded his entire consciousness to have like a Wi-Fi link with the computer system on the ship.
Yep.
Just in case he happens to get blown up. I don't know if that
would work.
I was about to interject there. I don't know if this is too nerdy. I'm always under the impression that Data's positronic brain is the only thing that's capable of holding his sort of
identity. Right. Until they develop flash drives in Nemesis.
Right, exactly.
What would have been an interesting season-long story is you kill Data, you blow Data up, and then you determine that Data's consciousness now is alive on the ship, and nobody knows how to build Data, but Data knows how to build Data. So Data, throughout the season, instructs Geordi on how to rebuild Data.
That could work. How about Data?
Is this show off the air? Can I get a writing job on this show?
Data injects his consciousness into the Borg ship, and they build a Borg ship that is a giant Data, and it accompanies the Enterprise on all of its adventures for the rest of the ship.
It's like Spaceball 1 at the end of Spaceball.
I think that would be the best way to go about these things.
This is a big Borg, but shaped like a cat.
And it just goes irrelevant. That's like the noise it makes as it peters around.
To dial it all back in, I honestly don't know who you could kill. I mean, I think killing Picard is just such a big move, and you're not going to kill Riker. I mean, honestly, I think Riker has a better chance of dying than Picard does.
Well, we'll call it there. People on YouTube, if you're listening to this on YouTube, leave a comment. Who the hell would you kill? Let us know. And I'll report back on the findings if anyone wants to share.
If it was me, I would get rid of Troy because I think Guinan does what Troy does.
Yeah. Although Troy would literally come into this episode just to die because she's really not involved in anything. She'd be in like a Hot Pocket and walk in and get stabbed or something. Anyway, let's wrap it up. We'll go to final thoughts after this. I'll play an audio clip. We'll come back. We'll give our ratings for Best of Both Worlds Part 2.
How much do you remember? Everything. Including some brilliantly unorthodox strategy from a former first officer of mine.
All right, guys. We're starting season 4. We're nearing the halfway point. This one's called Best of Both Worlds Part 2. We all gave Best of Both Worlds Part 1 a 5, so I'm curious and I'm very interested, especially how negatively Clay started this off with where he's going to go with his rating. But let's start it off with Clay. What are you going to give this one, a 1 to 5?
I'm going to retroactively change my score for Best of Both. No, I'm just kidding. I'm going to give this a 4. I'm going to give this a 4.5. I don't think it's as good. If you're just judging it standalone-ish episode by episode,
yep.
I still think, again, maybe it's unfair, but I think the first half of this is the best thing they've done so far, and this is good. It's
you mean
better
the first episode, not the first part of
the first part one.
Yep.
Is the best thing they've done, and part two is good, but I mean, it does. It's better than the stuff you usually get, but you know, like I said, I think the level of urgency is not there at the beginning. I think there's good stuff towards the middle, like the you know, like we were talking about, and I just like we all said, I think it wraps up way too neatly at the end.
Yep.
But that being said, I wouldn't say don't watch it. It's not bad. It's very good.
Yeah. Right.
But I think it's for me personally, it's going to be tough to beat part one.
It's tough to discuss. It's tough to discuss them as two separate entities because you end up sounding more negative, I think, because of the, you know, you're just comparing it to the other. So to finish off your thing, what would you give both parts as a whole as opposed to just the part two?
Oh, that's tough.
Do you think the second part detracts enough where it would knock down the first part if they were paired together as a story?
I do.
Wow.
And I'll give you an example of the difference. So I think if you watch this together, that dip at the beginning is too drastic for me.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you were to watch the pilot episode and the second episode of Miami Vice, those two together are like a perfect movie. Like there's no dip in – like everything just flows through perfectly.
Yep.
And maybe it was written that way. I don't know. But there's – I think the change in aggression and the change in intensity between parts one and two of this are just – I don't know. It feels like they weren't written together, which clearly they weren't.
Right. Yep.
So I mean if I were to judge it all I mean, I can't really – I think it detracts, but I can't really give it less than a 5 as a total because, I mean, overall, I think it's great.
Yep.
But, yeah, I would give it overall a 5 because, I mean, you know.
Sounds good.
I'm not going to be that picky about it.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to run into –
After I finish being picky about it.
You're not going to run into that many episodes probably of Caliber. But, Sean, what do you think? Let's give me a rating as a standalone and then give me a rating as a whole piece.
I thought this it was satisfying in that it solved the problem set up by the first one, but I feel like it solved them in a very they dropped the ball a lot while it solved those questions. And I feel for that reason I'm going to give it a 4.
Okay.
And I think overall I give them both together a 5 just because it's such a big, important story for the whole series that if there's a top 20 or whatever, this is definitely on there. So I in my mind, I think there's probably like 20 episodes that are worth a 5. So I think this is one of them.
Yes, I would totally agree.
How about you, Wes?
I'll say, well, Clay, what do you want to say before?
No, you finish first, then I'll say what I was going to say.
All right. I think it's tough. I don't give half points. So I think this would be a 4.5 if I gave half points. I try to stick to the 4 and 5. I think this episode, like I said before, is really strong for 80% of it. And then it's really just that last, it's probably not even 20, it's probably 10%. It's like the last two scenes are problematic enough, but I understand that they had to do it because that's the kind of show this is, where each week we're just going to bounce back and the new thing is going to reset and we can't have Picard emotionally crippled. So I think I'm going to give this one a 4, but it in no way detracts from the whole of the story, which I think is a 5.
Yeah,
right.
The impact of the failure of the last 10% of part 2 is negated by the awesomeness of part 1. So it becomes less of a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So that's what I'd say. I'm going to give Best of Both Worlds part 2 a 4. I wish I could give it a 4.5. I'm going to give it a 4. it just to represent, it's the weaker half of these two episodes, and it's only weak because of that stupid, silly ending.
Yeah, the only thing I was going to say is if I was in charge and could do this retroactively, I would make Best of Both Worlds Part 1 the series finale.
Oh, and just end it where it is.
Yes, have the Borg take Picard, have him turn into whatever, and then end it with Riker saying fire, and that's all you get for the rest of the series.
That's all you got. You got nothing else. Everyone will have to just go off to their fan fictions and sort of debate endlessly about what goes on. Interesting. That's the hardest four I've ever had to give, I think, on the shows, because I do love this one, especially the early parts. It's a little. I love the. My last thing going off. I do love the Guinan and Riker scene. I like how it's sort of a callback to the Yesterday's Enterprise scene. I like how it all sort of ties together like that. But that'll be it. So we're on to family. After this, which I think, Clay, you were mentioning before, you wanted to see some repercussions from what happened to Picard.
That's all I want to see ever.
Family is going to cover a good deal of that, as well as a few other issues.
Good.
So we're all going to be back for family, because I consider it to be the official third part of Best of Both Worlds. And
this is my favorite two-part episode of Star Trek named after Van Halen song. I should say that.
You know what's sad? If you search for Best of Both Worlds, the first thing that comes up on Google is a Miley Cyrus song, I guess. Ugh. So,
Has anybody cut a video using footage from this episode with that song?
When I cut Emissary into the scene to add that the intro, the Battle Wolf 359, I'll also get to the Cyrus thing. Interesting. Yeah, so we'll be back with family. I'm looking forward to it. Season 4 is an interesting beast, and I'm looking forward to seeing what other people think about it. So that's it for season 3. I hope you guys enjoyed my season 3 wrap-up, which went up right before this episode. And continuing on, if you enjoyed the content you listened to today, a like on YouTube and a comment on YouTube is appreciated. If you're on iTunes, a rating and review is much appreciated. Helps get the show out there. I'm going to be back with season 4. All the familiar guests are coming back. Maybe a few new people, too. I have to see who the hell is interested in talking to me about the Star Trek. So anyway, thank you guys for coming on.
Thank you.
And, thank you very much, man.
No worries. Thank you very much for giving your opinions, as always. And I'll be back. We'll be back with family. See you.